school and wider community in mourning. Just 13 years old, a young life lost to COVID-19. Honoring the Brampton teenager whose death is serving as a heartbreaking example of how anyone is vulnerable.
And with fresh signs of how Ontario's health system is struggling, the military is stepping in. The help on its way and how the province is further shifting its response. Good evening. Emily Victoria Vigas is one of the youngest people in this province to die of COVID-19.
Her father, an essential worker, her family living in a hotspot. Her passing now prompting demands for action amid this third wave. CTV's Beth McDonnell is live in Brampton tonight with more. Beth.
The 13-year-old girl was a student at St. John Henry Newman Catholic School in Brampton. Her death is being felt by the school community, by healthcare workers, and people all over the GTA.
At Brampton City Hall, flags have been lowered for the 13-year-old girl. At Queen's Park, a moment of silence.
In memory of Emily Victoria Vigas, a 13-year-old from Brampton who's become one of the youngest Canadians to die from COVID-19.
William Osler Health System says the girl arrived in the emergency department at Brampton Civic Hospital on Thursday and passed away the same day.
Death from COVID-19 in younger patients, particularly children, is certainly exceedingly uncommon. But when the number of cases are growing and the number of cases exist are large, we are going to see events in all age groups.
Condolences have been pouring in. She was a student with the Dufferin Peel Catholic School Board. Our prayers go out to the family, staff, students, and all who are impacted, the board said. It's heart-wrenching and a devastating reminder of what this virus can do. On behalf of all Ontarians, I'm sending my deepest condolences to everyone who is suffering from the terrible loss of this young life, said Premier Doug Ford.
Words don't describe this type of loss.
Brampton's Mayor Patrick Brown says the girl's death highlights the risk of people going to work in this third wave and the need to keep up with vaccinations.
The father, an essential worker who had no choice but to go to work. His family wasn't leaving their home. You know, the risk was, you know, he was working in a warehouse. And it goes to show the consequences of COVID are real. They're severe.
William Osler says to their knowledge, the 13-year-old girl is the first person under 19 to die from COVID in its health system. Most children have a mild illness, but there are warning signs. Persistent fever, an unusual rash, shortness of breath, or chest pain. All reasons to visit the emergency department.
William Osler Health System says there is capacity at emergency departments and says families can also reach out to their family doctors and to virtual resources if their child has COVID-19 symptoms and they're not sure. Reporting live, I'm Beth McDonnell.
Thank you, Beth. It's been a message those on the front lines have been repeating for months. Ontario's health system needs help. And tonight, members of the armed forces are preparing to deploy.
Much needed assistance for hospitals as the province pivots its vaccination strategy. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
You know, Zurata, we know that the Canadian Armed Forces came to this province's rescue during the first wave, and now once again they're going to be showing up in a big way. Members of the military will be airlifting healthcare workers from Newfoundland all the way to Toronto tomorrow. Today, though, members of the military were also doing a bit of reconnaissance, trying to figure out where their members will be needed the most. Across the province, Ontario continues to post high COVID case counts, and the pressure on ICUs is only intensifying.
It is just stunning. Like, it is unbelievable the extent to which everybody is suffering.
Ontario now has 877 COVID patients in intensive care, twice the number than at the beginning of the month. And hospitals are quickly approaching a dangerous red line when emergency rooms will have to invoke the critical care triage protocol, deciding who gets a bed and a chance at survival.
That's why we are transferring patients from one hospital location to another to ensure that they can receive the care that they expect and deserve.
But transferring patients alone will not solve the province's problem, which is why Ontario has now turned to the federal government for assistance in the form of the Canadian Armed Forces.
What we are looking for is very specialized nurses that can help out in our intensive care unit beds.
A request that Ottawa was quick to approve.
We have medical assistance teams that consist of nurses and medical technicians through the Canadian Armed Forces. Three units will be ready to go.
And now the province is looking at significant changes to its vaccine distribution as well, looking to redirect half of its entire vaccine supply to the communities where it's needed most.
Because we know that does have a really significant effect in reducing transmission, getting the numbers down, which means fewer people hospitalized and so on.
Ontario's Science Advisory Table published a new study last week on the impact of a targeted vaccination campaign. By reserving 50% of the vaccine for hard-hit communities, Ontario could prevent 56,000 COVID-19 infections, more than 1,700 hospitalizations, 258 ICU admissions, and 517 deaths. Doctors argue the community that needs this the most is Brampton.
Peel has, as we know, has the highest case count, yet one of the lowest in the vaccination rate in our province.
And the situation will grow worse, they say, without vaccines. It has also been days now since Premier Doug Ford said a paid sick leave program in Ontario was being designed by his government on the recommendations of the Science Advisory Table. Today, however, no such plan was implemented or introduced, and the government actually voted against a bill that would have given employees 10 days of paid emergency leave. Reporting live, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
Thank you, Colin. Meanwhile, this is a stark indication of where Ontario stands. The Field Hospital outside Sunnybrook Hospital accepting its first patient today. CTV's Sean Lethong is live with more. Sean.
Well, Michelle, it's a rather startling sight. You see the string of green tents behind me looking almost militaristic, but it's where we are right now, and they're hoping that this can ease the strain on the system.
These images show the beginning of a new chapter in the healthcare system's fight against COVID-19.
The MHU, or mobile health unit, is now clinically active. It's operational. We have our first patient.
A field hospital built in the parking lot of Sunnybrook now taking patients.
It's sad that we're at the point, obviously, that we have to bring in all these alternate resources.
In a system that is stretched to the max, beds inside this unit will take COVID patients from across the GTA, but none of the patients will be in need of an ICU.
We're going to be accepting patients that are COVID recovering and COVID recovered.
Recovering patients must be stable before being transferred here, and the average stay is an estimated 3 to 5 days. Planning for the hospital began in late February, with construction starting soon after. This follows a similar hospital built in the parking lot of Burlington's Joseph Brandt.
As it stands now, capacity here is 20 beds, but they do plan on ramping that up relatively soon.
The first 20 patients will be scheduled to arrive over the coming weeks. As numbers change, they could see capacity go as high as 84 patients in the coming months.
What we're hoping to be able to do is take some patients from the acute care centers to be able to allow them to have more space for the more ill COVID patients that are coming in.
With ICU admissions coming close to 900 province-wide, the system needs all the capacity it can get.
And what may be an equally important issue is the number of staff that it takes to work in here. For these first 20 beds, it'll be about 50 to 60 staff, and that needs to ramp up as they ramp up as well. We know currently they're being staffed from within Sunnybrook. Reporting live, I'm Sean Lethong-Zarida. I'll send it back to you.
Thank you, Sean. Looking at the broader virus picture, Public Health Ontario is reporting 3,510 new cases in its most recent update. That brings the province's total to nearly 449,000. 24 deaths are linked to the virus, putting that figure at 7,935, and just over 400,000 cases are now considered resolved.
The regional breakdown looks like this, with 1,015 new cases in Toronto and 909 in Peel Region. York Region has 391 cases, Durham 244, and 143 in Halton. There are 71 new cases in Hamilton and 23 in Niagara Region. Next to what's becoming a familiar picture in some virus hotspots, long lines outside pop-up sites as residents wait for their shot.
And if you don't arrive early, you're likely out of luck. The demand is evident. CTV's Scott Lightfoot is live with more. Scott.
Well, Zoraida, this clinic today here at Downsview Arena really shows both the power of social media and the interest that the people in this neighborhood have in getting vaccinated. Humber River Hospital posted this online, this clinic, last night, a Sunday night. Less than 12 hours later, they had some 2,000 people here looking to get the 1,000 available doses.
From the air, you can see the lineup stretching around the parking lot, along the entire length of Downsview Arena, down the street, and back around an entire city block.
I'm pretty excited. I've been waiting here for a couple hours, so I'm all smiles under this mask.
They started lining up here just after 4 a.m. The clinic didn't open until 9.
It feels great to have my turn finally.
And by 8:30, before the doors were opened and the first vaccination had even been given, officials had to cut that line off. 1,000 doses of the Moderna vaccine were available to be used here today, and officials from Humber River Hospital say more than twice that number of people showed up.
Today was quite incredible. The leverage of using social media is really helping out.
This pop-up clinic was just announced last evening. Any resident 18 and older who lives in 4 hotspot postal codes was eligible, and many showed up willing to wait hours and hours standing in line.
I think that it's a shame. There's a lot of people who don't have the economic ability to do this. I was able to move appointments around this morning. Not many other people can do it.
With limited vaccine supply, officials knew when to stop the line, but many chose to wait on the off chance there might be extra doses.
Literally right now, we're working on a day-by-day basis, depending on the supplies that we receive. We do have confirmation that more busing is coming to the city and to the province in the coming days. So next week is looking more promising to be able to do large volumes. But this week, there is a little bit of a shortage, so we're working day by day.
Vaccine supply is an issue being faced at hospital-run clinics across the city this week. Some hope various levels of government will stop focusing on who's to blame for the spotty vaccine rollout.
This is a pandemic. I mean, if everyone just got together, stop your differences, and just get everyone vaccinated.
Many here relieved to finally get their shot at getting a shot.
And another clinic will be held here tomorrow. It is not a walk-in or pop-up clinic. Must be pre-registered in order to attend tomorrow. And it's only open to people in this area who have meet specific criteria. Now, officials say they are hoping by the end of the week they will be able to hold another pop-up walk-in clinic here at this site. Pointing live at Downsview Arena, I'm Scott Lightfoot. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Scott. Across the province, the Ministry of Health says more than 69,000 doses were administered yesterday. That brings Ontario's total to nearly 4.7 million since the start of the rollout. And more than 361,000 people in Ontario are considered fully vaccinated, having received both doses.
Ontario is reporting a third case of blood clotting linked to the AstraZeneca vaccine.
The individual, this time is a male in their 70s, who developed a blood clot following the receipt of a COVID shield or AstraZeneca vaccine.
The person is receiving treatment in hospital. There have been 5 cases of the extremely rare occurrence nationwide. People 40 and up are currently eligible for the AstraZeneca vaccine in Ontario due to supply issues.
Also tonight, the aftermath of a Newmarket house fire and the heroic rescue efforts that likely saved the lives of those trapped inside.
Lindsay Morrison's here now with a look at our current conditions. A bit on the cool side today, Lindsay, but plenty of sunshine.
Yeah, overall, Zoraida, I'd say it was a pretty nice start to our week. But yeah, we're tracking a few showers at this hour. I'll step aside so you can see. Just starting to reach toward the west end of Hamilton, and we'll eventually drift into the greater Toronto area as we make our way through the night tonight. Winds, generally speaking, have been light today. They've strengthened somewhat in the last couple of hours. But temperature-wise, we have remained in the single digits today, a little below seasonal. Currently on the Toronto Islands, it is about 6 degrees. It's 8 at Pearson International. Still getting some peaks of sun, but that cloud cover is increasing, and we're looking at an overnight low of 4. We'll talk about your 7-day forecast coming up. For now, Zoraida, I'll send it back over to you.
Thank you, Lindsay. Quite the scene over the 403 near Woodstock after a multi-vehicle pileup this afternoon. The CTV News chopper captured this video showing a burnt-out trailer
that appears to be completely separated from the front end of a truck as well as an SUV in the ditch. Two people suffered minor injuries and the cleanup will be extensive.
Back in this city, emergency crews rescued two people from a fire at Ossington and College. The call came in after 3 p.m. One of those people had to be pulled to safety through the roof. Both are being treated for smoke inhalation.
Meanwhile, in Newmarket, a family has a quick-thinking neighbor to thank for pulling them from a burning home early this morning.
Tonight, that hero is sharing how he managed to get them to safety. CTV's John Musselman is live with more on this story. John.
Hi, Michelle. Yes, his name is Josh, and he was also helped by another neighbor here by the name of John, and they all jumped to the rescue when the house behind me was on fire. This cell phone video was shot just minutes after a family of four was rescued from the second-story balcony of this Newmarket home. Josh Mazzotta not only recorded the video, he helped save the people trapped on the second floor.
I ran to the front door, and I started ringing the doorbell and shaking the door, and I noticed I was able to kick it in, so I kicked the door in and I started shouting into the house, but I didn't get any response.
Mazzotta was heading to work this morning around 5 a.m. when he noticed the house on fire. He and a second neighbor grabbed a ladder and helped get an 11-year-old, a 16-year-old, and both parents off that balcony.
Step back from the house and I see lights turn on in the window. And John, I guess, came out of his house and I screamed to him, bring your ladder. I held the ladder, John went up, grabbed the kid, and then he came down with no pants, so I wrapped my sweater around him.
When everyone was down safely, Mazzotta picked up his phone and recorded the flames. You can see the first fire truck arrive on the scene.
There's explosions happening in the front of the garage and the cars, and then tires were letting off air and it sounded pretty violent. So I was a little worried about if this thing's whole thing's gonna blow, what's in the garage.
Mazzotta says he doesn't know the neighbor who helped him, but they worked as a team.
He said, I just saved a family. And you can hear his voice while he's recording the flames, the house burning.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
He saw smoke, called 911. Then he got out and he was like banging on the door, trying to open the door.
Mazzotta says he is no hero. He just reacted.
I don't really want that accolade. I don't want any recognition. I'm just glad that people are alive and well. And
no one was injured in the fire, but the damage is extensive. Two vehicles in the driveway were also damaged. The Ontario Fire Marshal has been called in to determine the cause of the fire. And we just got an update from those investigators. They say they need to bring in some heavy equipment tomorrow to go through the debris. It could be a few days before they can determine what happened here. Reporting live in Newmarket, I'm John Musselman. I'll send it back to you.
Thank you, John. Still ahead, parents already being asked to make decisions about school in September, despite ongoing uncertainty about the situation right now. We have those details in just a few minutes.
Two men and four boys have been charged following a shooting in the northwest part of the city. It happened early Sunday morning in the area of Jane Street and Grand Ravine Drive. Two people outside a community center were shot at when police say a car pulled up, a person got out and opened fire. One man suffered serious wounds but will recover. Two loaded guns were recovered when the vehicle was stopped by police and the suspects were arrested.
18-year-old Wasit Izaz of Toronto and 18-year-old Moses Wright face nearly 20 charges each. They include discharging a firearm with intent to wound, endanger life, or prevent arrest, aggravated assault, and possess restricted or prohibited firearm. A 15-year-old, a 16-year-old, and a 17-year-old, all from Toronto, face the same charges. So does a 16-year-old from Woodbridge.
Returning to our COVID coverage, Toronto police visiting more than 200 parties over the weekend as officers try to put a stop to what could be super spreader events.
As CTV's John Woodward reports, a couple living next door to one worries the gathering could put their family at risk too.
Early Friday morning, this surveillance video shows people streaming into a Richmond Street West semi, a party neighbors say that got quickly out of hand.
They made a lot of noise. They woke up the neighbors. Then this is happening during the COVID lockdown.
Frightening for the Ordine family who share the too aptly named party wall.
COVID being in the community now rampant, having a super spreader event connected to my wall, as well as we're sharing the vents, it's very scary. We don't know if somebody in there is infected and can infect other people.
Someone called the police, officers there within a few minutes, taking each of them aside and writing tickets. Not the only party in the last few days. This video from early Sunday morning show as many as 100 partygoers running from police. The event happened in this rental space that was left a mess as the party spilled out onto the street. Toronto police say their dedicated enforcement teams attended more than 210 parties, laid more than 160 charges, including 8 criminal charges.
Also concerning, this Richmond Street semi was among a handful of short-term rental properties visited by police, despite city rules that they can only be used for those needing shelter.
The owner of the Richmond Street semi says the city has asked her to cut ties with her property manager, and she's given notice.
I obviously didn't know about this party, and it is really upsetting and disappointing. Especially given just like the realities of where we are with the pandemic and how serious it is.
The Ordeens say they asked city bylaw officers to take action on the short-term rental weeks ago. The city says it's investigating.
Nothing has happened so far, so it's just been really frustrating to live beside this.
They're following a stay-at-home order, but don't want these parties to bring COVID to their home anyway. John Woodward, CTV News.
Meanwhile, Toronto Public Health is ordering the full or partial shutdown of a dozen workplaces in this city amid virus outbreaks.
But despite the concern about spread on the job, officials say there still isn't enough vaccine supply to bring the shots to the sites. CTV's Natalie Johnson reports.
3 massive workplaces in Peel Region are set to open their own immunization clinics for essential employees in the next few days. After the province announced 2 weeks ago that employers in hotspots could apply to host vaccine pop-ups for their workers.
All well and good, and those are, you know, probably positive tools. The problem is you have to have the vaccinations.
And the City of Toronto says there is simply not enough vaccine supply to start allowing workplace clinics in this city at this point.
I think the model that they're using in Peel is interesting, and we might want to take a look at that. But all of this is predicated on having adequate supply. And for the moment, I think we've made it very clear that our priority has to be on the hottest of the hotspots.
Toronto's Medical Officer of Health says the pop-up clinics being hosted in hotspot neighborhoods end up reaching essential workers from multiple workplaces in addition to their families. The latest data from Toronto Public Health report 44 active workplace outbreaks in warehousing, shipping and distribution, construction, manufacturing, offices, and food processing. Meanwhile, Toronto Public Health is ordering the full closure of 4 workplaces and the partial closure of 8 workplaces under the Section 22 order that shuts down any business with 5 or more COVID-19 cases in a 14-day period.
The purpose of the new order is to separate people who may be infecting each other throughout the duration of the workday, and then taking those infections home.
The names of the workplaces being shut down will be made public once the orders have been served. Toronto, meanwhile, says it will explore allowing vaccination clinics to be set up in essential workplaces once the vaccine supply is there. Natalie Johnson, CTV News.
We've seen the lines outside pop-up sites in the GTA, but there are several so-called hotspot neighborhoods that are still waiting.
A lack of supply being blamed, residents asking when it'll be their turn for a vaccine. CTV's Mike Walker reports.
After weeks of waiting, Daravan Supashaman finally got his shot.
My parents also work in the hospitals, so, you know, they're in high contact too, so I don't want to catch it.
He lives and works in Regent Park, a hotspot neighborhood where access to the vaccine is limited for anyone under 50 to this community clinic and the Wellesley Community Center, both operated by Unity Health. The clinical director at the Regent Park Community Health Center says the demand is far greater than the supply.
We're averaging between 100 and 200 appointments here a day. This is one of the smaller clinics. And so our maximum capacity at this clinic would be about 250 clients. So vaccine supply is one of the largest challenges.
The neighborhood among a cluster of postal codes identified as hotspots in the east end of downtown, but not among the 13 priority neighborhoods where public health is currently focusing its supply and opening more clinics, leading to concern and frustration among some residents that there are not more options.
A lot of people still have to go to work and have to be out in the community.
Hope for there to be more. I am a bit disappointed.
Joseph Bohr has been trying to book an appointment for weeks and came to the clinic this afternoon looking for help.
There's never spaces when I try to book an appointment online.
Toronto's top doctor says the rollout to hotspots is dependent on supply.
Right now it is a question of getting appropriate and adequate vaccine supply.
The city is expecting to receive more than 297,000 doses next week.
That total will be allocated to our hospital and Ontario Health Team partners in support of hotspot, mobile, and pop-up clinic operations.
But there is no timeline for when more hotspot neighborhoods like Regent Park and Cabbage Town could see pop-up and mobile clinics. City officials say they are working with their hospital partners to determine locations,
along with the means by which each mobile clinic will be scheduled, booked, and communicated.
As for people living in these neighborhoods,
because I'm worried there's going to be appointments released, and by the time I wake up, I'm going to have missed them.
The wait continues. Mike Walker, CTV News.
We'll have to wait and see if any will be coming here north. The U.S. now planning to share up to 60 million doses from its AstraZeneca stockpile. 10 million of those will likely be released in the coming weeks. It's unclear yet, though, where all those shots will go. The White House says it's going to assess a range of needs and requests from around the world. The U.S. has already loaned Canada 1.5 million doses.
A growing number of nations are pledging urgent support for India as it struggles with a catastrophic surge in COVID-19 cases.
Oxygen is running out. Intensive care units are at full capacity and nearly all ventilators are in use. CTV's Glenn McGregor reports.
A desperate scramble for the most basic necessity of life. Hospitals don't have enough oxygen supply to handle the massive surge in demand. COVID patients are literally suffocating.
I have a message for the government. Please release some oxygen supply. People need it here. People need beds here. People need meds here. People need wards here. People need injections.
India's case count is exploding. More than 350,000 positive tests reported in just 24 hours. Because of poor infrastructure in parts of the country, oxygen they need can't be produced locally, and tanks must be brought in from elsewhere, by train and now via the Indian Air Force.
The situation in India is beyond heartbreaking. WHO is doing everything we can, providing critical equipment and supplies, including thousands of oxygen concentrators.
Some families are turning to the black market to buy tanks, paying vastly marked up prices. India's Prime Minister today spoke to President Joe Biden after the U.S. lifted an embargo on the raw materials used to make vaccine. And the U.K. is sending more than 400 concentrators, which extract oxygen from the air. Canada has pledged support, too.
We will stand ready with PPE and ventilators and any items that might be useful for the government of India.
But it's unclear exactly what Canada can provide. It's facing its own equipment crunch, with oxygen concentrators and related supplies listed on the government's medical shortage page.
India has been a source of vaccine for countries around the world, including Canada. But now that it desperately needs vaccine, Mexico today canceled an order for AstraZeneca doses and told the government of India to put them to use at home. Glenn McGregor, CTV News, Ottawa.
Meanwhile, the European Commission is taking legal action against AstraZeneca for breach of contract. It says the British drug maker was supposed to supply 300 million doses of vaccine, but only 30 million were delivered in the first quarter of this year. AstraZeneca says its contract contained vaccine delivery targets, not firm commitments, and it faced early problems with expanding production capacity.
Back here at home in Ontario, the countdown is already on for some families to make school arrangements for the fall.
It's hard to think that far away, but for those in the Durham District School Board, they'll need to decide soon. CTV's Saran Fennell reports.
Durham District School Board families have until May 4th to decide how they want to enroll their child in the 2021-2022 school year, either in person or virtually.
I don't know how realistic it is to make that decision right now.
With COVID-19 at its worst in Ontario and the trend in new cases ever changing, this mother of two says it's a big decision to make with such little time.
Are they going to go up? Are they going to go down? Are people going to adhere to the safety protocols? Are they going to relax a little bit? So I think that all that is a lot for a parent to take into consideration in a very short amount of time.
The Durham District School Board says it needs parents to decide by 11:59 p.m. on May 4th so the board can appropriately staff schools and provide stability for in-person learning once the year is underway. Families are being asked to consider their decision carefully as students will not have the opportunity to switch learning options.
Families were making decisions on that as late as September last year.
Advocates say air quality in school buildings is still an issue.
School boards were back then left scrambling because they don't have a source of money other than the provincial government. All of the ventilation that happens in those classrooms is dependent upon fresh air coming in from the outdoors. So That is a non-optimum place to come into a pandemic.
Parents across the various Ontario boards now weighing their options.
I don't feel overly comfortable sending her to school right now. The vaccine rollout doesn't seem to be streamlined very well. Teachers aren't getting the vaccine.
Both of my girls are struggling with their mental health being at home. They're both kind of depressed and withdrawn, and they both do much better in class.
My husband and I have already always preferred the in-person learning.
Other Toronto school boards have not yet finalized a deadline on enrollment. Saran Fennell, CTV News.
Still to come, a cross-border trip causing some serious problems for one Ontario driver. Her quick visit to Quebec may cost her hundreds of dollars after a surprise ticket showed up in the mail. We'll explain.
So we were a little below seasonal today, and it was a chilly start this morning. Minus one early on in the city of Toronto, but even cooler in other communities. Last night, we also had our first frost advisory of the year. It was the first day, in fact, of the frost season in Toronto, Niagara, and Windsor. East and west sections of the GTA, your frost season begins on Saturday, and areas further north in the weeks after that. Tonight, frost is less of a concern. We're forecasting an overnight low of 4 degrees with a few showers this evening and into the early part of the overnight. Tomorrow, a bit of a temperature improvement for us, but it is going to be feeling like summer in another part of the province. We'll show you where coming up. CTV News will be back in 2 minutes.
For more than a year, the province has said it's okay if your license plate sticker is expired, that due to the pandemic, you do not have to renew it for now.
But a Sarnia woman says she not only got a ticket when she went to Quebec last summer, but has been told to cross the border during the stay-at-home order if she wants to fight it. CTV's Raheem Ladani reports.
The license plate sticker on Sarah Gould's car reads June 2020. And she knew it was expired when she and her friend drove into Quebec for a day trip last September.
There was no ticket on the car. Again, nothing out of the ordinary. Our trip ended. We came back home. And then a couple weeks later, I had this whopping ticket in the mail.
Chelsea, Quebec police issued a ticket for nearly $500. A shock for Gould, who was under the impression her expired ticket was fine because Ontario extended validation due to the pandemic.
I would never purposely drive an unregistered vehicle, but if they don't want people in there to renew, and I normally renew in person, I'm just not going to go if that's what they wish.
The province's website states license plate stickers that expired on or after March 1, 2020 are considered valid until further notice. And in a statement to CTV, the Ministry of Transportation says it has communicated these changes through an all-chiefs memo on multiple occasions throughout the extension period. The bulletin was sent to law enforcement agencies in Canada and the U.S. The 21-year-old wants to fight the ticket, but under Ontario's stay-at-home order, the border with Quebec is closed. However, when she called the courthouse, they told her this.
They said there's no special protocol. They told me just to come anyways. They said that this is essential.
Debatable, says the respiratory therapist who helps COVID-19 patients on ventilators and feels uncomfortable making the trip.
They're pretty much wanting me to travel across the province of Ontario, and just that would be an unnecessary risk for everyone.
Instead, she's left with a ticket she believes never should have been issued. Raheem Ladani, CTV News.
And multi-platform writer Sean Davidson has more details on this story, along with a rundown of the current rules for Ontarians. That's at ctvnewstoronto.ca. Weather-wise, the day started one way, beautiful sunshine, and now you can see behind us as we look at the skyline, it's shifting into that rain territory.
Spring continues to do spring, Lindsay. Yes, and in this final week of April, we have a few April showers in the forecast. In fact, we're already seeing some spotty light showers around Hamilton, Ancaster, over toward the Waterdown area, and perhaps for you in Burlington as well. Tomorrow, though, it is going to feel like summer in extreme southwest Ontario. Windsor might make it to 25 degrees. Weather is brought to you by Train for home comfort, cooling, and clean air. It's hard to stop a train. It didn't exactly feel like summer today here in the GTA. We made it to a high of 9 degrees, single digits just about everywhere in southern Ontario, with the exception of places like Peterborough and Kingston. As far as the almanac is concerned, that means today we were a little below seasonal. The average or the norm for this time of year is now about 15 degrees. We weren't as mild as we were yesterday, and that's saying something because I think most would agree, felt a little cool out there at times thanks to the winds. Tonight's low is expected to be around 4 degrees in Toronto. It will be cooler for areas in eastern Ontario and then milder for these southwest. So what's happening? Why is it so much warmer in places like Windsor and London and Waterloo? Well, there's a warm front that's bringing us the showers tonight, and it is going to allow milder air to make its way into that part of the province. For us here in the GTA, we're dealing with an east wind off of Lake Ontario, so you can even see based on these colors that it's going to be a cooler day, hopefully a little bit warmer than it was today. We're forecasting around 12 degrees, for example, but mainly cloudy skies this time, and yes, holding on to a chance of a few showers. Here's the current satellite and radar. We're dealing with one disturbance right now. There's a couple that will be impacting us over the next couple of days. In fact, I'll take you through the forecast radar and show you that in addition to tonight's chance of showers, which will happen through this evening and then maybe into the early part of the overnight hours, we're looking at a decently dry day tomorrow with some cloud cover. Then into the day on Wednesday, heavier rain to the north, maybe a risk of thunderstorms over the next couple of days. And generally speaking, it is quite unsettled as we make our way through Wednesday and Thursday. So keep the umbrella handy. Overall, our temperatures aren't that warm, but the sun will be back by Friday, and this upcoming weekend is looking pretty good. That's the 7-day forecast. Sarita, over to you.
Thank you, Lindsay. Also tonight, breaking down the Academy Awards, from the night's big winners to the show's biggest surprise and the moment that still has everyone talking. Diagnosing autism spectrum disorder can often be difficult.
But some new research is hoping to simplify and expand the process. Our health reporter, Pauline Chan, has the details.
Let's blow some bubbles.
Past studies have shown children with autism see the world in a different way.
And what a typical child will do is they're certainly interested in the bubbles, but they're also interested in you.
The smartphone app, which the researchers are developing, records a toddler's gaze as they watch the video.
A baby with autism or a toddler with autism is going to be mostly paying attention to the bubbles and really ignoring the person.
Autism researcher Geraldine Dawson says these patterns are noticeable in children as young as 6 months old, but current assessment tools, typically questionnaires at about 18 months of age, are filled out by parents who often get confused with particular wordings.
And in fact, the questionnaire tends to over-identify kids as at risk for autism.
That means families who may not need to are going to behavioral specialists, adding to the already long wait lists.
Duke University researchers tested the app on 1,000 children with 90% accuracy at identifying toddlers who would later go on to be diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder.
Parents view a series of videos with babies as young as 6 months and send the recordings of their child's gaze to the researchers for analysis, a swift and pandemic-friendly process. And the hope is that it can lead to much earlier diagnosis.
Because the good news is that we actually have strategies that we can teach parents to use even at home, very simple strategies that draw the child's attention to the face and gets them engaged in social interaction.
Pauline Chan, CTV News.
We'll talk about an unbelievable wake-up call half a world away. Anthony Hopkins slept through his win at the 93rd Academy Awards.
He says he didn't expect it, but he is privileged and honored. CTV's Andrea Case has a look back at the award show, which looked like something we haven't seen before, Andrea.
It kind of made me nervous, actually, Zoraida and Michelle, to see all those people together. Yes, there was a red carpet, a couple of hundred people in what looked like a pre-COVID award show, but the Nielsen ratings say it wasn't a popular draw. Viewership was down by 58% over last year, a record low. But with viral moments and streaming, people are still talking about the Academy Awards.
Anthony Hopkins, the father.
We start with the last award of the night, Best Actor, which left many surprised, including the winner himself. Sir Anthony Hopkins was in his homeland, Wales, and was sleeping when the announcement was made.
And at 83 years of age, I did not expect to get this award. And I want to pay tribute to Chadwick Boseman, who's taken from us far too early.
Many thought Chadwick Boseman, who died from cancer last year, would win the award posthumously. Someone who was there, Halifax-born Oscar nominee Ben Proudfoot, who did not win his category, short subject documentary.
It was a thrill. I've talked about this a bit, but I lost my dad in the last year.
And he was such a probably the proudest Canadian I've ever met. And he would have just been so thrilled that I was there representing Canada.
And the Oscar goes to Nomadland.
The Best Picture win for Nomadland and Best Director award was history-making for Chloe Zhao. She's the first Asian woman to win these two major awards.
This is for you. You inspire me to keep going. Thank you. Thank you.
Nomadland star Frances McDormand won the Best Actress award. Glenn Close went viral when, in a music trivia quiz segment, she did the debut dance. To many, it appeared Best Supporting Actress winner Yoo Jung-yoon, star of Minari, was flirting with presenter Brad Pitt, but his production company produced the film.
Mr. Brad Pitt, finally, nice to meet you. Where were you while we were filming in Tulsa? It's very honored to meet you.
Now, you have to cut Sir Anthony a break because it was 4 a.m. in Wales when his category was announced. He's received both vaccines, so he was just only recently able to return to his homeland. At 83, he is now the oldest actor ever to win the Best Actor Academy Award. Reporting for CTV News, in my Oscar attire, I'm Andrea Case. Good night.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
In memory of Emily Victoria Vigas, a 13-year-old from Brampton who's become one of the youngest Canadians to die from COVID-19.
Updating our top stories, her father was an essential worker. Brampton's mayor saying this is a tragic reminder of the risk of people going to work during the pandemic.
What we are looking for is very specialized nurses that can help out in our intensive care unit beds.
The federal government has approved a request to deploy military medical personnel to Ontario. The province is also looking at redirecting half of its vaccine supply to communities that need it most.
It's sad that we're at the point, obviously, that we have to bring in all these alternate resources.
And a field hospital in the parking lot of Sunnybrook Hospital accepted its first patient today. It'll serve people from across the GTA who are recovering from COVID-19. The average stay is expected to be between 3 and 5 days.
Don't forget to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if ever you have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know. Well, many essential workers are still waiting.
The Ford government still not releasing details of any provincial paid sick leave. And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Nick Dixon. So, Nick, the government voted down a bill aimed at paid sick leave today. You've got a political panel to weigh in.
Yeah, more than 20 times now, the Conservative government in Ontario has voted down bills trying to put paid sick days into law here in Ontario to try to help people throughout the pandemic here. But once again, it was voted down today with, of course, the majority Conservatives being able to vote it down. So Michael Coteau, who the Liberal who put this private members bill forward today, he's going to join us along with an NDP and a Progressive Conservative to debate kind of the merits of what happened today, but also what really needs to happen now. I mean, all of these times it's been voted down. What's next? What's it going to take? Doug Ford said last week sick days are going to be coming. Paid sick days of some sort, but we still don't have any details.
Nick, you probably heard before the break, we were talking about the Oscars. They're the lowest rated in history. And I think it's going to be interesting. You're getting reaction from Cameron Bailey and Richard Krause tonight.
Yeah, I mean, two of the biggest names when it comes to, you know, sort of movie and theater in Toronto. Cameron Bailey, of course, behind TIFF, and Richard Krause, CTV's host of Pop Life and movie critic. And they're going to sort of break down what's going on with the Oscars. Because, Michelle, as you point out, down 58% last night. But the year before, they were down as well. So, I mean, the numbers keep falling. It's not the only award show that's having an issue. So is this an identity crisis? What's happening with award shows? We're going to dig into what's happened with the Oscars specifically. That's our chat tonight at 8:40.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
And CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar gained a half a cent to 80.67 U.S. American benchmark oil gave up 23 cents a barrel to 61.91. And the TSX Composite Index gained 68 points to close at 19,170.
After the break, Toronto Twins doubling up on pandemic projects. The sisters already making a difference and reaching out to young people around the world. It's time now for Toronto Together and twin sisters making the most of their talents.
The high school students have each launched their own nonprofits to help the community and beyond during the pandemic.
So Just Me Tutoring was started in June last year, and it's really just focusing on providing free virtual one-on-one tutoring for students all across the world. It actually started.
Selena Gua started Just For You Tutoring last June after experiencing the challenges of virtual learning firsthand. She began helping other students here in the GTA, but has now connected with people in more than 30 countries. Meanwhile, her identical twin sister Sarah is helping to amplify the voices and ideas of young people just like her.
I realized that a lot of adolescents are overlooked for being like too young. So that was the biggest catalyst for my organization, because I wanted to create a platform where youth could share their thoughts and feelings without the fear of being judged.
Sarah's Eyes on Youth aims to publish digital magazines, offering young people the opportunity to express themselves through artwork, creative writing, and more. Sarah's already connected with more than 90 interested writers from around the world.
Incredible work. Let's talk about the forecast. Lindsay, we're expecting wet weather to now move in and kind of stay with us the rest of this week.
Yeah, on and off. It's not going to be a complete washout of a week, but yes, we do have several opportunities for some rain. Right now, we have some very light showers starting to make their way into the north end of the GTA. We've been talking about the west end as well. Still just a little bit of cloud cover downtown Toronto, but again, that will change as we progress through these evening hours. Next 24, we have a decent chance of showers right through the evening into the early part of the overnight. Tomorrow, we will hopefully have some sunny breaks, but we'll hold on to a 30% chance of showers. It's Wednesday that becomes a little more unsettled. Thursday, perhaps more in the way of steady rain, but conditions improve after that. That's your weather for now. Michelle and Zoraida, back to you.
Thanks, Lindsay, and be sure to join us later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
And you can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, this CP24 Tonight with Nick Dixon begins momentarily on CP24.
For Lindsay and all of us here at CTV News, have a great night.
Thank you. See you at 11:30.